privilege to introduce to you tonight's speaker by way of Riverdale, currently residing in Lemoore, just a bright light in this program. His name is Henry. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name's Henry. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to come here and speak 6 months ago. I've been dreading it for the last 6 months. But the day has come. So today's my birthday. Today I celebrated 3 years of sobriety. Thank you. And it did not take 3 years. It took more like 6 years to get 3 years. Let's see. So I grew up country. Two older brothers, mom, dad, lived on a ranch, no neighbors, that's fine, whatever. A week after I turned 18, I decided to move down to L.A. And not knowing anyone, that's where I started trying to make friends, going to school full-time and working full-time. I drank a little bit in high school. You know, some people get up out here on the stage and they're like, yeah, I had my first drink when I was 5 years old and my dad was, like, rooting for me. Like, I don't remember that. I can barely remember what I had for dinner last night. I just know that I had a drink somewhere in high school, and I don't think I enjoyed it, and I don't think I, like, kept doing it, but it was, like, my first drink. And I didn't really start drinking until I moved down to L.A., and I was trying to fit in. And that's what all of my coworkers were doing, and that's what all of my classmates were doing. And before I knew it, I was ditching my Tuesday night, French class for Taco Tuesday. And then I was skipping out on, like, my three-hour math class, and I was going to, like, Stripper Circus Wednesdays, because that was really fun event. No matter what night of the week, there was always something going on. The only day that I didn't really go out was a Monday because nobody would go out. But there was this one bar that it was called like Musical Mondays, and they would play musicals on the screen. That was really cheesy, but I still went sometimes. Whatever my friends were doing, I just had this, like, I could not be by myself. Like, that was my problem, was I always needed someone to be around, and I was never comfortable being by myself. And even though I lived in an apartment by myself, I always had friends there, or I wouldn't even come home. So fast forward, I dropped out of school because I thought it was more important to be making friends and going out. I remember times when I would go out and we would, you know, be partying in Hollywood, and I worked all the way in Santa Monica, and we would stay out until like 3 in the morning and then take the city bus all the way over to Santa Monica and then clock into work at like 5:30 in the morning and just go straight to work. And then, you know, we'd get off work and then we'd take a nap and then we'd do it all over again. And that was our like daily routine. I remember racking up over $3,000 in parking tickets because I always told myself, like, oh, yeah, like, I can't park on this side of the street, so I have to move my car by 8 a.m. I have to be in class by 8, like, perfect. And I would, like, not wake up, not go to class, not move my car, and then I'd get a parking ticket. And then that parking ticket would double because I wouldn't pay it. And pretty soon my registration was revoked, and I remember my parents taking my car away, and that was, like, my first big resentment that I had towards my parents. I don't know. Fast forward to some other things that have happened. I got involved with a group of friends that everyone said stay away from. You don't want to be a part of that group. They were known for being the bad crowd, and I didn't care. What I saw was money. What I saw was clubs. What I saw was drugs. And I saw friends. That's what I saw. And, you know, that lasted for about 3 months until that all disappeared. And, again, I was left wondering, where had all my friends gone? Why didn't anyone want to party with me anymore? I was still drinking, still using, never really slowed down. I remember I would, like, balance my paychecks to, like, all right, I can spend up to $450 from this paycheck, and then I can spend, like, $25 off my next paycheck in order for me to pay rent on the first. And I would always overshoot the mark, and every Friday night I would be like, all right, I can only buy, like, three drinks, and then I have to, like, go home. And that would turn into, like, 20 drinks. And And I would wake up the next morning, and my bank account was really low, and I had, you know, my rent was due in the next week, and so I would have to call dad. And I would, you know, like, I always put it on my parents' shoulders. I'm like, hey, like, dude, like, rent was due 6 days ago. If you pay after tomorrow, it's an additional 10%. You know, I don't want to lose my place. Like, I need help, and they would always help me out. And I remember always putting that pressure on my parents, and, you know, they didn't have to do that, but they did, because I was always lying to them, and I was always deceiving them on what I was doing with my money, saying that I had to pay for a bus fare because they took away my car. I had to eat out because I couldn't carry my groceries home because I didn't have a car. Like, all these different excuses, but none of it was true. I remember losing my job twice from the same company for being late. I remember I was, you know, couch surfing on a coworker's apartment. She had just sent her son to rehab at the age of like 16, and I was here in her living room doing drugs. I knew she knew, but for some reason she allowed me to stay on her couch. And work was only a block away, and I still managed to be late. And I don't know how, but it was just something that I was good at. I was always good at being late, and I was always good at lying, and I was always good at getting my job back until I finally lost my job for the second time, and they're like, we don't want you back. And I remember that day I called the one person that I knew who was in this program, and he said, sit tight, I'll come grab you, and we'll go to a meeting. I don't remember that meeting. I remember crying the entire meeting. I remember it being like a Jewish center, and there being a whole bunch of little old Jewish ladies. It's probably not even true. There probably weren't any Jewish ladies. It was just like the Jewish center, but that's what I remember. And I just remember crying through the whole thing. And somewhere in that meeting, someone gave me a big book, and someone gave me a 12x12. And, you know, for the longest time, I used that 12x12 as a coaster, or I used the big book as a coaster, and that 12x12 was at the bottom of my drawer. And I didn't find that 12x12 until like last year, at the end of last year, which is really bizarre. A big part of my story is running from all my problems. That one person who was in the program told me that I needed to move home and that I needed to get my life together and that I needed to go to a meeting and that I needed to get my head screwed on straight before I could, you know, roll with the big dogs in LA, before I could actually live on my own, because I wasn't capable of doing any of that. I moved back to the Central Valley, moved in with my parents. Soon after, my dad passed away, and I remember just being sober for like the entire month he was in the hospital and having that moment of clarity of not being high or drunk, but being able to be by his bedside and watch him slowly pass away in front of me. And, you know, that was a 2-week process, and I will forever be grateful for that moment that I had with him. And, you know, it's something I can look back on. Not a lot of people get that chance to be sober when a loved one passes away. And I always hear stories about people regretting that. And so I'm glad that that didn't happen to me. I like to run away from my problems. And so when my dad passed away, I, like, bounced out on my mom. I was like, peace out, I don't want to be here, like, you're super depressing and that's not me, like, I have to go. And I remember I joined a friend's band and we went on tour for about 2 years across the United States, and every night it was drinking, it was using, it was waking up in a new city every day. And, you know, I had no one looking over my shoulder. They told me, they're like, hey, bus call is 6 a.m. be back at, you know, 5:30, whatever, so we can leave at 6. And that's how it was for 2 years. And I didn't need anyone to tell me what to do. I was making money every single day, and I was spending that money later on that day. And when I came home from those tours, my mom would be like, what happened to all your money? I'd be like, I don't know. I had to buy food. I had to buy lots of food. And that wasn't the case. I was definitely drinking and using the entire summer. And it was a shit show, and it was an experience for sure. And I don't regret it, because those guys are still some of my best friends, and they were kind of a mirror to me and showing me that how messy I was towards the end of it all. I came back to the Central Valley, and I went down to LA for an event, and then I jumped on a plane and I flew out to Vegas. And I went to this party in LA knowing, like, I had like 5 days sober, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to this giant party, and like, I'm going to be sober throughout it all. And like, you know, 2 hours later, I was like drinking champagne, and then it switched to beer, and then it was down to like vodka water, and that turned into like me booking a plane ticket to Vegas. I don't know why. And then I got to Vegas, and then it escalated even more and more. And After a week in Vegas, this is the funny part. I woke up in the Flamingo Hotel, and I looked over, and my friend was laying in that bed covered in Chinese food, like all Chinese food, and I just was like, what am I doing here, you know? And I'm like, roll over, and I look at the clock, and I had missed my flight back to L.A., and he was about to miss his flight, so he booked it, and I'm sitting there, and I'm staring out the windows at the Bellagio fountains, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, this has got to stop. Like, this sucks. I looked at my bank account, and I was like, -$26. So I couldn't afford to get back home. My mom and I weren't on talking terms at that moment, so I had to call one of my best friends who knew about my addiction and who supported my addiction, and she funded my way back to LA, and I'm grateful for that moment too. One of my other crazy nights out there was waking up in a blackout in a hotel room with my backpack on, face down in the bed. And not so funny because I don't remember it. The only way I remember it is by technology and Uber receipts and text messages, and that's the only way that I could piece together that night, but there's still a four-hour window that I don't know what happened, and it still makes me a little scared these days. I was just having this conversation with a sponsor recently about that night and how it still bothers me to this day, not knowing what had happened throughout that night. And I can't pinpoint, but I know it's happened other times. I have this vague memory of me sitting on a couch in somewhere between Highland and La Brea and like a very specific area of Hollywood, and I just remember sitting on this couch in a bright red light, and that's all I remember. And I remember who I was with, but I don't remember what happened. Moments like that are starting to pop up over these past couple of years of me getting sober, and it's kind of frightening to me not knowing what had happened or what I got myself into. So after I got back from Vegas, I called that one person that I knew that was in the program, and I'm like, hey, I can't do it. I need help. This whole living in Lemoore, trying to get sober, is not working out for me. What do I do? And he said, come down to LA. We're going to go to a conference and just come hang out with us for a little bit. And I was like, all right, cool. Let me run away from my problems again and figure it out. But this time, it was a little bit different for me. I was running away because I didn't want to be under my mom's roof. And we went to a conference. It was out in Palm Springs. It was 5 days long. It was an all men's conference. And I remember having a lot of fun and going to the water park and hearing some amazing speakers, and there was amazing musical guest artists, and I took this workshop there, and it was a spirituality workshop, and I just remember holding one friend's hand from LA and one hand's friend from San Francisco in my hand, and I started crying and I was bawling, and I left that workshop really feeling connected to a higher power, and I really felt that I had overcome that spiritual malady that the book talks about. And I remember at that conference, people were telling me, they're like, you need to learn how to take direction. And that was the first thing that had happened to me in this program was I learned how to take direction. So at that conference, they said, you need to go work the volunteer table. So I went and worked that volunteer table. They said, you need to go sell raffle tickets. So I went around asking people for money to sell raffle tickets, something that I was super uncomfortable doing because I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't know anyone. And I'm forever grateful for that moment and for that guy who ran that spirituality workshop and me being able to hear the message that whole week. I went back to LA for another 2 weeks and got a sponsor there. He's my sponsor today. He knows he's my sponsor today. He has a sponsor. We went to meetings every morning, 7 a.m., Winner's Attitude Adjustment, over in Burbank, and that's what I was used to. It was a really great meeting. It's about 100 people big every single morning. And it was a great meeting to get a real good foundation. And then it was time for me to come back to Lemoore because I had to face reality and go back to my mom. And I wasn't working, so I had to move back. And he said, when you get back, look up the nearest meeting and go to that meeting. And actually, that was Tuesday nights in Lemoore at the Alano Club. And my friend Pete was the secretary of that meeting. And he was sitting there, and I didn't know anyone. And he was really friendly and reached out to me. And from that day forward, I went to a meeting every single day after that. My sponsor told me that for every day that I wasn't working, that I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I did. Pretty soon, that turned into me taking over that Tuesday meeting and becoming the secretary. One thing led to the next, and my circle of friends was growing. I was still working with my sponsor. I was still doing step work. I just wasn't doing it alone. You know, I remember the time when me and my sponsor sat down and we're reading the big book, and we get to chapter 5 and it's like how it works. And I was like, oh, hey, I know this part because I had been reading about it in meetings. I never knew for the longest time that the reading chapter 5 that we sometimes do in the beginning of meetings came from the big book. So when I came across that in the big book and I was like, hey, I know this part, like I was thoroughly shocked. And my sponsor's like, oh, bless your heart. Like, it's okay. And, you know, that was my mental state when I came into this program. You know, I couldn't recognize that a reading that called chapter 5 was probably from the big book that we talk about in every single meeting. I wasn't able to comprehend the words that were in the big book. I had to have my sponsor break them down for me line by line because I just wasn't capable of doing that. I was able to read the words. I just couldn't make sense of what the words were saying. And for me, that's what it took. There's a lot of big words in these books, and this book was written a long time ago. And like I said, I'm a college dropout, barely graduated high school. So I really needed someone to walk me through this book, and I understand why they say that to get a sponsor to help you walk you through the big book. These steps, steps 1, 2, and 3, I thought were really easy for me, and I like breezed through them, and I thought like, great, yeah, step 4, like let's get on step 4, and I sat on step 4 for like maybe like a year or so. And come to find out, I had to take a step back and really work through step 1 and step 2 because I wasn't able to give it up to a higher power. I was still wanting to do it all myself. I couldn't believe in something greater than myself. I had to really take it back to step 1 and thoroughly digest that step for me to, in order to get started on a step 4 and actually get through a step 4. My recommendation is if you're stuck on a step 4, it's not because you're lazy. It's not because you don't want to do it. It's probably because your higher power, you're not working with your higher power. You don't have that open connection with that higher power. At least that's what it was for me. And that's what was really halting me in my progress. Some other things that have happened in this program, I feel that God gave me a job at the time that He wanted to give me a job. I think for 5 years that I've lived with my mom, every single morning I woke up, she's like, where have you applied? Where are you working? Where are you going to work? And, you know, that was really starting to wear on me. And once I was able to actually put in the footwork on applying at jobs and being responsible with my parents, with my mom, and God gave me that job at a certain point in my steps. I think if I were to get that job any sooner, then I would have gone right back out. You know, I've always had this mental thing where if I was making the same amount of money that I was doing before, if I was living comfortably like I was before, if I had a car and I was being able to get around, that I would go right back out to drinking. So I had this fear of I didn't want to work because I didn't want to make money because I didn't want to go back out. I thought that's how it was going to be, but it wasn't the case. I didn't have to be like that, and I was able to look at it from a different perspective. And you know, before I knew it, I was working at that. I got a job, and I've been working at that job for over 2 years now, which is great. You know, like I said, my father has passed away in this program. My mom started dating right after my dad passed away, and then got remarried, and then like moved out of the house. I had all this fear around my living situation again. I'm like, right, well, my mom's moving on. Is she going to leave me here by myself? Am I going to have to find a new place to live? Like, it was really stressful for me. I didn't know what was going to happen with my life. I used to take my mother's car and leave and not come back for a day or two. There was no way she was going to trust me with her house, you know? So I was like very, like, all right, like, I need to start making a backup plan. Like, I was already starting to think, like, screw this program. Like, I'm going to drop all my commitments. I'm just going to, like, move out, and I'm going to go away. And, you know, things didn't happen that way. I just continued working with my sponsor, and I continued doing stuff work, and I continued to pray and meditate and do all the daily maintenance stuff that I need to be doing in this program. And God showed his way and not mine. And me and my mom's relationship today is a lot better. She does trust me living in her house by myself. And I'm still, you know, I have to be an adult about it, and I can't just be throwing parties all the time. I can't be, you know, making a mess and not picking up after myself. There is still, like, footwork that I need to be doing about maintaining this relationship with my mom, and it's just not freely given to me, and I feel like I had to work for it. And, you know, to this day, she looks at me and she says, I can tell you're not doing drugs anymore. I can tell you put on some weight, and I can tell that you're working your ass off, you know. Although it's a part-time job, I'm still working. It was a lot better than me just sitting in my room staring at the ceiling. So I'm very grateful for that relationship with my mom. None of that would have happened without this program. What else has happened? So a big part of this program for me are commitments. I really feel like having a commitment kept me grounded, kept me coming back, it kept me accountable. It helped me become on time. I was fired from the same job twice for being late, so if I'm going to be making it to the meetings late, I'm probably going to get fired from that position as well. It really instilled in me that I had to be on time and that I was people were relying on me, not only for my sobriety, but for other people's sobriety as well. I remember I would, you know, open up the doors for a meeting and only 2 to 3 people would show up to that meeting, but I was still there because that was my commitment, was to open the doors and to lead that meeting. I remember going to a camp out with some young people, and I had a conversation with a guy, and he said, you should start a young people committee in the Tulare County. And I was like, I don't want to do any of that. Like, that doesn't sound fun to me. I'm just here for my sobriety. And, you know, that turned into us starting a Tulare County's Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, which is now joined with Fresno County. Some of you have gone to Tukipa's Soul Christmas, our Christmas event that happened last year. That was one of our first events that we threw as a committee. And now we are joined forces with Fresno County, and now we're Tuffypaw. So we got some big things coming up, and we have a conference that's actually coming over to the Visalia area. It's ACIPAW's All of California's Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous Mid-Year Conference. It's ACI Summit, which is about a 500-person conference, and it's a really big deal for us. So that has kind of been taking up a lot of my time. With that committee, we started up not only the Visalia Young People's, that's on Wednesday nights. On what street is it? North Hall Street. We just moved location, so that's every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. So if you're not here, there's another meeting down the street. And, you know, that's where I'm currently treasurer right now. Tuesday nights, Friends in Sobriety, where I'm a GSR. That's over in Hanford, the Church of Koinonia. That's my home group. They say that wherever you're a GSR and you're carrying your group's vote, that is automatically your home group, so that makes it my home group. I have a Friday night men's stag meeting that I attend over in Hanford. And with that, there is a men's retreat that I go on twice a year, once in the springtime in Morro Bay and once in the fall time over in Bass Lake. And I am the treasurer for that as well. Also, Tukipa started a young people's meeting over in Lemoore on 19th and Cinnamon on Friday nights at 7:30. It's a great meeting. That one is holding up strong. And, you know, it's really nice to be able to get involved in my sobriety and gather like-minded people to start meetings. Because I was always told, if you don't like a meeting, then you don't have to go back. Don't let anyone ever steal your seat in a meeting, but just don't go back. So that was, you know, I had problems in the beginning of my sobriety. You know, I had people threatening to slit my throat because of the way that I looked, because of the way that I dressed, because of the way that I talked. And do I go back to those meetings? No. What did I do? We started our own meetings that I could, you know, identify with, meetings that I could feel comfortable in, and meetings that I can enjoy going to. And, you know, I'm really grateful for everyone that shows up and supports all the different meetings and takes part in my sobriety as well. What else? 10 more minutes. Working with others. So I am not a sponsor yet. I don't have any sponsees. My sponsor has 3 other sponsees. But, you know, I think working with others doesn't always mean going through the big book and doing the 12 steps. Sometimes working with others is picking up that phone when they do call and helping them out through day-to-day stuff. Maybe if someone needs a ride to a meeting or ride to fellowship, or if they can't afford fellowship, it's kind of taking them under their wing. I know when I first came into this program, I didn't have 2 pennies to rub together, and someone paid my way for a long time. And, you know, I've given back to this program what was so freely given back to me, and I continue to do that on a daily basis, whether that be financially through the 7th tradition, whether that be through picking up that phone because someone needs help, or whether that be showing up to a meeting and making sure the door's open. I don't know how many commitments you guys have here, but if you can get a commitment at this meeting, that would be great. Any other meetings? We're coming up to the 6 months, so meetings should be turning over and getting new positions right about now. I know Wednesday night's young people is looking for new people. What else should I talk about? 10, 11, 12. Let me open that up. So 10, 11, and 12 for me. Let me see. Continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So for me, that means going home at the end of the day and reflecting on how my last 24 hours have been. Did I do anything wrong? Have I made anyone mad? Did I say something that was probably out of line? Did I offend anyone? Did I react in a way that I probably shouldn't have to, whether it be my mom, a fellow alcoholic, my boss, a coworker, or maybe even a customer at work. That happens all the time. Recognizing those mistakes and then making the proper amends or the next steps that I would have to do to make sure that my side of the street is always clean, because I never want to let things fester and build up and get under the rug and have that giant mound, because I think for the longest time I was running through life causing mayhem and making a mess of everything that I was doing and never turning around and saying sorry or apologizing and just like continuing to burn bridges. And then I would sit there and wonder, why was I always alone? Why no one wanted to hang out with me? Why no one wanted to be my friend? And why everyone looked at me and was like, no, you're not, you don't deserve this job, because I was not trustworthy. I was always burning bridges. I was always making a fool out of myself, always thinking that I was the bigger person by saying what was on my mind, which doesn't necessarily always need to happen. 11, the prayer meditation thing, for me, it was a really hard thing to comprehend. Like the whole prayer meditation, like sitting like this with your legs crossed, like that wasn't comfortable for me. I couldn't sit in a room by myself with my thoughts. And so I literally had to get on YouTube and I had to look up how to meditate. I literally had to get on YouTube and look up, like, what am I supposed to be doing while I pray, you know? And with the help of my sponsor wakes up every morning at 5 o'clock and sits there and meditates for 20 minutes before jumping in the shower at 5:30. Like, he has a very specific schedule. And I got to work at 5 o'clock this morning and I was able to get a phone call from him at 5:30 because I knew he was done with his meditation and he was about to jump in the shower, but he called me and wanted to wish me a happy birthday. And so, you know, that's something that I picked up from him. The direction that I had to learn how to take was, that was one of them, was I always want to start this day off by meditating, praying, and being grateful for everything that I do have. Do I do it all the time? No. I'm not going to stand up here and say, like, hey, every single morning I'm praying and I'm meditating. You know, like, some days I forget. Some days I don't make it home. Just had this talk with my doctor. He's like, are you taking your daily pills? And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes I don't go home. Sometimes I don't have those pills on me. Sometimes I don't have my big book on me, but I have it on my phone. Sometimes I just get caught up and I don't meditate and I don't pray. And I do feel it at times when I don't do those morning routines. When my routine gets messed up, when something gets in my way, I freak out. And so I need to be a little more cautious about doing that daily meditation and that praying. But one thing that I always do, because I can't go to sleep without doing it, is when I lay my head down, I have to think about how my day was and where I went wrong. That's something that I always do, because it'll keep me up until 3-4 in the morning if I don't, or if something is bothering me. So other than that, I don't know. Questions? Oh, does anybody have questions? I like this part. An amends? Oh, yeah. So, I was living in L.A. with a roommate, and I remember rent was like $700. My portion of the rent was $700, and we were drinking together, and, you know, it was like 7 days after the first, and I didn't have money for rent, or I only had half the money. Long story short, I had to make financial amends to this roommate of mine, and it was somewhere around like $3,000 or something like that. And, you know, it's obviously been many years since I've lived with that roommate. I've been sober for 3 years, and I have this open contact with him. Like, hey, like, remember that time that, like, not only did I drink all your beer, but I did all your drugs, and I never paid you rent, and, like, you supported my bad habits, so it's kind of your fault, too, and, you know, like, those are, like, totally the wrong way to make amends. And I'm like, yeah, just to let you know, I still owe you money. And then my sponsor's like, that's not how you do it. And he's like, what you're going to do is you're going to apologize for what you did wrong. You're going to sit there and talk to him about how you messed up and, like, what was your part in it. And you're going to set up plans to pay him back. And, you know, we made plans to me paying him back. And he says, you don't have to pay me right now. He's like, I know you're struggling, and I know you're, you know, living on your own, and you have bills and this and that. And he's like, I'm not in need of the money. And so right then and there, like, that money that I owed him, me acknowledging it, me sitting down and having a conversation about the financial portion of it, he was able to just diminish it. Just say, like, you know what, you don't owe me that money. And, you know, for the longest time he would hold it over my head. But now that I'm sober and he's seen that I've turned my life around, he no longer sees that I owe him that money. And he sees me cleaning my side of the street. And I actually just got off the phone with him before I came to this meeting. And he apologizes to this day about introducing drugs to me. But, you know, like, that relationship that I have with him today is a lot different than I've had with him before. And not only financial amends, but amends that I have to make to my mom. I was very sharp tongue towards my mom. I said some very mean, hurtful things to my mom. I've done some very mean and hurtful things to my mom after my dad's passing. Whether it be out of anger, whether it be out of my drinking, whether it be out of my using, doesn't matter. I hurt my mom in one way, shape, form, or another. And, you know, today it's a living amends with my mom. I apologize to her. She didn't really quite understand why I was apologizing to her, but in my mom's eyes, I have to give her a daily amends, and that's treating her with the best respect, treating her how I should be treating a mom. And with my mom, she doesn't speak fluent English, so I can't really have a conversation with her. It's more of, like, she likes to argue, and that makes me mad, so I like to argue back. And I've had to do some step work on that and understand that just because my mom doesn't speak perfect English, and just because she doesn't comprehend how I do, just because she doesn't have a conversation how I want her to have a conversation, I need to be okay with that, and I need to let that go. I need to understand that, like, not everyone has the communication skills that I have. Not everyone is going to be able to elaborate how I want to elaborate, and that's okay. So the best way for me to apologize to my mom, best way for me to make amends to my mom, is to show her on a daily basis that I have changed and that I will continue to change for the better. So, yeah. I think that's all I got for today. So thank you guys so much for letting me speak tonight. Thank you.
Let's give another round of applause for Henry.